For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
All of a sudden, Busch Stadium with some energy again. Bases loaded. Cardinals down to their last strike. Ring him up, strike three. And Tanner Banks comes in, gets the strikeout. And the White Sox, after a 3 hour and 3 minute rain delay, win it 6-5 in the 10th.
It goes to save for Tanner Banks, who comes on and gets the job done. And finally, and mercifully, this one has ended. And even more importantly, the Sox do have the win, which means tomorrow afternoon, get your rest, quick turnaround. It's going to be the third final and rubber game of the series.
Oh, man, there's so much in mercifully there from Steve Stone. So much. It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score. A little bonus time as we take you all the way towards Cubs pregame at 12:45. And what a delightful opportunity that provides as we welcome James Fegan of Sox Machine to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. James, good afternoon to you from St. Louis, from us here in Chicago. How are you?
I'm good. I probably passed out like 3 hours after that game ended last night. It was exhausting in every way, but it was nice to not walk into a silent clubhouse again.
What was number one among the exhausting ways? Psychologically?
Yeah, I would say so. There wasn't really any like food available anymore, so I can't say the decision I made when I opened up DoorDash when I got back to the hotel room was like the best one. Very much swinging on my shoes at something in the other batter's box type of move.
But. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes you hit those over the plate. Was it fried?
In some form. There's a place that will celebrate you basically anything in calzone form, not far from me, and that just seemed like, well, that's great. That sounds very carryable. Let's go for it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Calzone to be named later, I think, is an excellent choice by you. Boy, that was crazy. I got to say, though, John Brebbia is a delight. Like, his aggressiveness to try and get that stuff in and the way that he talked about afterward, it reminded me of Vince Velasquez and Mike Trout from a couple years ago. He wanted to play. Did everybody else want to play, too, through that downpour?
I think, like, they wanted to steal the win. I certainly don't think they wanted to go through this. But, like, that wasn't what I expected him to say at all. Like, the way he was reacting, how much he was struggling to, like, keep any ball dry, I assumed that he was just saying, like, this was impossible. Like, how do we do this? Like, I can't. Like, the last pitch he threw, he was sitting, like, 94, 95 the whole outing. And he threw, like, a 90-mile-an-hour fastball right over the plate, which I assume Gorman, like, couldn't even see. So the fact that, like, he thought this was great, let's keep going, was not what I expected his answer to be. I thought he was messing with me the first couple times he said it. I asked follow-ups. He's like, no, I was insisting. Like, we have to keep playing. This wasn't tenable.
Yeah. That's amazing. You know, that actually dovetails with what the video is. Yeah, because he's, like, rubbing his hand, like, on the legs right under the groin, the only safe, dry place he had, apparently. And he's trying to get it in. But, boy, C.B. Buckner's an odd one. Earlier in the game, like, was it Lopez who got called out with no punch out, no action
right.
at all? Yeah.
Lopez got called out with no action. Michael Kopech absolutely split the plate on 1-1, then got no call because there was a base stealing at the time. Then, like, Tanner probably threw strike three two pitches earlier, then gets strike three on something, you know, a baseball whiff outside. It's just one more wacky one for the road. I felt he thought he had to give us.
Yeah, just throw another calzone on the order at that point, I think.
That's what logic I go by.
I recommend it. Look, the bullpen's been good, and a lot of the arms are looking impressive. Is it a... You know how volatile bullpens, though, are. Is the bullpen success a sign of anything in particular in your mind?
I mean, I thought it's been a little choppy recent in terms of, like, trying to hold leads against the Twins. But I think, if anything, it should indicate, like, this is not where we should think $50 million going forward. You know, they were able to kind of... You know, Kopech's obviously was acquired at a high cost, and this is more of like a secondary option for him. But they're able to piece together decent arms. I mean, Brevia wasn't somebody you had to break the bank for, because, you know, you kind of targeted somebody with, you know, a history being decent who's coming off an injury. You know, Steven Wilson was kind of a throw into that trade, and he's been a decent, medium leverage guy. But I think it goes to show that you can kind of get people with some of this upside as either throw-ins in some of these major deals or find guys who have been affected before coming off injury and kind of cast a wide net. I mean, obviously, we're not talking about Joe Barlow and Corey Knebel anymore, but, you know, you're going to get a hit rate on some of them where you should be able to fill out a decent crew if you're economical and you're opportunistic.
Yeah, maybe I'm overstating the bullpen success. The bullpen ERA is 21st in baseball, just ahead of the Cubs, and that's all we're talking about is how much their bullpen is struggling. I guess I'm dealing with some Sox fans looking for bright spots, and some of them have landed on Jordan Leisure and the like in the pen. So I guess that's how we get here conversationally. But you brought up the $50 million and the overall expenditure, and I had asked you, like, if there's an alternate White Sox history out there of if they had assigned some of the young arms to the bullpen and taken their chances with it a few years ago, as opposed to spending for Graveman and even Hendricks and Joe Kelly. And if they, you know, what would have happened if they used that money on other stuff? And I dream of an alternate history, but you don't think there's much of an alternate history possible, if memory serves.
I mean, a little bit of the way that they push for the bullpen is because it's like the only area with the dollars that they had available to them. It's like where they thought they could find like elite guys. Like, they weren't going to, you know, for the rate you pay Liam Hendricks, you're going to get what, an average-ish, like, he basically made like, probably shade under Benintendi money, or It wasn't something that was necessarily going to make some competitors for George Springer, which I think is something we all thought they should do to solve right field at the time. They didn't feel like they were economically in that area. Now, even within that, I don't think it absolves them the idea that they spent efficiently or, you know, even tactfully to, you know, give them what they got from some of those investments. But I think it's a little bit of like, it was an adaptation to what we don't have. The resources to compete at the top of the market in the outfield. But obviously, I think that would have been a better investment. I think they would have gotten more bang on their buck just pursuing, you know, Bryce Harper, or just, you know, consolidating everything for, let's spend at the top for a positional talent that's going to lift us over the hump or compete for top starters. I think the real alternate history we think about a lot is Zach Wheeler or, you know, being more competitive. If they were willing to go for that outlay for Machado, what would be the real difference in pushing to the extra length or being more competitive on Bryce Harper? I think it's more the alternate history I think about than necessarily like, let's use the same amount of bullpen funds for something else. I think it's a little bit like, well, let's get the best reliever available. And to some degree, until he got hurt and got sick, Liam Hendricks, you know, was delivering on what he was promised.
Yeah, no, that's well answered. I think the you know, that alternate history of if they'd gone to 300 instead of theoretically stopping at 250 for Machado and he comes, what follows with it? You know, what does it signify and what happens along with it in addition to his success? But that's not what happened. Here we are, James Fegan from Sox Machine. In this modern moment, I heard Garrett Crochet and bullpen used in the same sentence by Pedro Grifol the other day, and I need help. I need help understanding why that's a possibility long term here.
Yeah, that was strange. I assume it would come as a result of him hitting some sort of wall late in the season where you see like signs of fatigue or you know other issues come across or waning effectiveness, where that's what you get ratcheted down to at some point, where when you ideally have Jonathan Cannon, Nick Mastrini, Drew Thorpe, even Jairo Uriarte maybe coming up and making some starts, and you're kind of tapering Garrett down. It's a little bit of just they're living in a point where there's really no model for them to follow. The light comp that they gave was 2021 Carlos Rodon. But Carlos Rodon hit a wall late season where he lost velocity, he lost effectiveness, and he had to skip him in starts, but really there was nothing that was helping him recover as well. So they're trying to avoid that if they can, but I think they're often prepared for the idea that maybe July and August, they were just going to hit a barrier where he's gone so far beyond anything he's ever done where you just have to taper him off somehow. And so that's what I assume he's kind of keeping the door open to, but it was a little jarring to hear, especially given his kind of role as kind of communicating the plan. I think he kind of wanted to be all in on Garrett the starter, we're committed to that project, and not kind of leaving over this weird door of like, well, maybe we'll abandon it at some point, which I think was jarring for all of us here.
Yeah, it's really weird. And I understand that there's no model. Like, what do you do with a great arm like this who is showing that he can be a starter, but you're worried you don't want it to blow up and you don't know how long to push it? Like, I guess I'm more of the mind of just shutting him down entirely, if that's what you want to do, as opposed to having him go to the bullpen, because it's such a different discipline and a different ask in terms of get up, get down, get up, get down, multiple times in a week especially. But these are uncharted waters when you've got a legit arm for a year that doesn't matter with another year that probably doesn't matter ahead of you.
Yeah, I think there might be, it would have to be really measured outings out of the bullpen. It's not like some guy who's going to like pitch 3 days in a row type of situation. You'd think maybe he comes out in relief and works two innings or something like that. I think they probably want to avoid the full shutdown because they want to get used to the idea of like, you have a 6 month season, you're going to stay hot, you're going to stay loose, you know, this entire span, and you're going to kind of get used to the rhythm. I think in trying to build up their stamina, their idea is that they don't want to have him just, you know, basically pitch 4 months and, you know, he's still getting used to kind of still pitching and being strong in August, September next year when you know, ideally it matters a little bit more, even if it's hard to look at the scheme of things. It'll matter next year.
I want to zoom out and go big picture in a couple minutes, but I want to ask you about a couple shorties first. Gavin Sheets leads the team in hits with a paltry 25, but I saw the opposite field yesterday getting utilized. Like, what do we make of the improvement here from Gavin Sheets at this point?
I think he's been the one saying that he can hang in against lefties and he can work all fields and he can be a more well-rounded hitter. And I think I wouldn't have necessarily thought it with the way his season ended last year, but he's done everything to earn this opportunity to give him this run. I know he's really geeked about being in there for a left-handed starter today. I think it's kind of the same league with Garrett where, you know, maybe I have a bit more expectations for Garrett being able to mature in his role, but I think what better use could you make of the season than give a guy who's kind of beating down the door a chance to prove it? What I think is interesting is when Luis Robert comes back and you've got, you know, theoretically Tommy Pham and Benintendi on the corners, you've got Robbie Grossman out there as well. Do you start, is that where we start having the conversation of Sheets getting some of Andrew Vaughn's at bats because his performance has earned it and it becomes a lot harder to fit him into the lineup when you got Eloy Mendez and DH and the outfield a bit more filled up. So I think that's kind of the interesting barrier when they really put this to the test is in a couple of weeks.
Wow. Yeah, that's because Vaughn, I believe Vaughn's OPS is sitting in the low 500s right now.
That'd be correct.
How has that happened? It looked like such a sensible hitter's swing, and now it looks chaotic up there. What has gone on?
It's hard to say. I certainly, at least, even if like if it's disappointing from what his draft status was, I thought this was like somebody who's going to be slightly above league average kind of year in, year out with the tools he has. You know, when I've talked to him, he's really just trying to get back to the foundation of his pitch selection, which he felt like was out of whack, and that's why he's trying to basically, you know, I know we want to see him pull the ball in the air more, but he's trying to see it deeper just because he's trying to, like, not be out in front on sliders more often. So he's been trying to work right field a bit more just to kind of get him right as far as picking what he swings at. And, you know, the whole maybe next-level development we were hoping for of seeing more power that we thought would be 25, 30 home runs at this point in his career, that's still a step off.
Boy, it's a rough go. All right, a possible bright spot. Brian Ramos is here. Defensive replacement yesterday. Gets his first start today. Will he be here long? And what are White Sox fans getting? Give us a thumbnail on Brian Ramos.
He's simultaneously got plus raw with this really compact swing that's kept him from being a 20% strikeout guy, even in the minors. He had a really slow start to this year, but he was heating up. He, you know, just hit a home run off he pulled a fastball at Ben Joyce the other day in Birmingham. It was like 99 miles an hour. So, like, the bat speed's there. I think he's a little raw. I think they know he's a little raw. I think they're also down to, like, their fifth third baseman because Lenny Dose is injured and Yoan Moncada is injured and Danny Mendick's injured. So, yeah, I think when Mendick's off the IL, he's probably going to go back. That's the anticipation I've been told. But he's someone I think of as the third base in the future, you know, notwithstanding Colt Montgomery moving off shortstop at some point or Jacob Gonzalez. But I think he's got as good a chance as anybody to be that. He's got these great raw tools for it, and it's just, I know people get sick of hearing it, but this is like, you know, an elite makeup guy. This is a young man from Cuba who's speaking and doing full English interviews like last spring training. This is someone who's just beloved in the organization the way he handles things. They thought there was really no harm of giving him a taste that he would handle it well because he kind of handles everything well, and so it'll good little, like, hey, this is what you'll need to do up here before, you know, probably makes a decision at some point in the season.
All right, so as White Sox fans, James Fegan, are asked to zoom out and believe in a possible big picture reconstruction or rebuild for the second time in a decade, Brian Ramos is somebody they can look at and enjoy today on the big league level, watch Garrett Crochet pitch. As you have experienced some of the new hires under Chris Getz, and some of them like Brian Bannister and Josh Barfield can inspire some if not confidence, then at least a little bit of optimism. How are you feeling about some of the big picture developmental principles, to the best of your knowledge, or some of the big picture ideas that have been shared with you to this point?
I like that I'm hearing a lot more about approach angle from the pitching development. I like that they're kind of searching for unique profiles. They're not kind of chasing, you know, what's been effective in other orgs so much. Maybe last time through, it's a bit more like let's find somebody who's unique in weird ways or has kind of different tool set. Like the Uriarte bet, I think, is really interesting and exciting because it's typically this guy that's tagged as a reliever and saying that we believe in his athleticism, mobility, that we can kind of coax command out of this frame that, you know, performance tracker, because it's not there, but looking at physicality, he has both athleticism to repeat. So the fact that they're kind of zigzagging in some ways that I think are interesting, it's not the same critical mass where we were saying pray for the league the way the last prospect group was. It's not that strong, but the fact that they're kind of looking for unique profiles in a way a bit more and less for, like, seemingly following the recipe of other rebuilds, I think that's interesting. I don't know if it really makes you more than a divisional contender with the talent lining up right now, but there's a bit more creativity than just, like, we tanked harder than anybody and maybe we'll produce more results.
All right, well, that's interesting. That's got some legs. At least there's, you know, some different ideas. What do you make of the success at Birmingham? I have to give credit to it because I, for years, have pointed out the relentless minor league success at every level of the Tampa Rays, and then you see what they deliver on the regular. And the White Sox have had horrific minor league win-loss results, including Charlotte now and Charlotte for the last several years. So seeing Birmingham be good feels like it should be encouraging, is it?
Yeah, I think so, and it's certainly something they're cognizant of. Let's not immediately rip this apart, or everybody who's good here needs to be promoted right away. There's definitely an attitude of, like, this team plays really cohesively together as a unit, that their defense and pitching is really symbiotic, and they're able to win even though, like, they're not as good offensively as maybe they are anticipated because Ramos got up to a slow start. So they're very cognizant of trying to keep that together and try to bottle that group and see what's going on there and not, like, throw it out of hand. It's just saying, like, Drew Thorpe looks like he doesn't belong here. Let's promote him. I don't know if it's quite necessarily transferable to every single level or if it's a little bit fluky with just, like, how much pitching they have stocked up there, but it's definitely something that I think they're looking at as, like, well, this is meaningful how do we translate it, and how do we also keep it together and make sure everyone gets as much out of it as they should.
All right, last thing, James. The White Sox reported deal to go with Stadium as a new regional sports network from a few weeks ago by the Chicago Sun-Times has now been trumped by reporting at The Athletic that the White Sox, Blackhawks, and Bulls will be instead partnering with something called Standard Media Group to create a new television broadcast home, and that will happen, according to the article, very, very, very soon. But then I thought the follow-up work by the dark overlord of Sox Machine, Jim Margulis, was really interesting, that Standard Media Group doesn't have a real tangible presence online or on the ground in Nashville, does it? This is, how are you feeling about this this plan for a new RSN at this point?
Mostly just like, oh, that's weird. I wonder what they'll really say when we actually hear about it. But right now, this is confusing.
Yeah, it's weird, man. It's weird. It really is. It feels very weird. I don't know what the hell's going on, but, you know, I guess that goes for a lot of things.
And I guess, like, Jim texted me, like, I'm going to go take a picture of their headquarters. And I was like, ha-ha, funny. And then he's like, no, really. And I was like, oh, all right.
He did. He's got a picture of the headquarters and a picture of, like, the promotional board of, like, what businesses actually are there. And I think he was standing near a line for the Maggiano's that was next door.
He circled the parking lot three times.
This is important work. I'm glad I'm a patron. I'm glad I'm on Patreon for Sox Machine. That's all I'm saying. I can read every little bit of that, damn it. Oh,
well, I thank you, and my landlord thanks you, because I'm now making rent, which is always something that lifts spirits of the entire group.
You know what? Consider that next calzone on me, indirectly. Okay?
I will.
Thank you. Think of me on your next calzone, which is the way I sign off with every interview now on Hit and Run. Think of me during your next calzone. Thank you, James. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. James is ridiculous and delightful, and I hope he does think of me during his next calzone. I'm telling you, man, there's no White Sox story that's normal. There's not a single one. And I mean, it's unbelievable. So Stadium was supposedly the deal. Now it's this thing with the Standard Media Group. And I'm telling you, Margulis's follow-up is just amazing. There's no signage indicating Standard Media's presence in Nashville. And the Standard Media Group does not seem to exist too much online. And we'll see what the hell happens. But I think James's reaction of, huh, that's weird, is very appropriate as of right now. Still to come on Hit and Run with one more segment to go. We will set the table in full for the Cubs and the Brewers. Zach Zaman coming up with pregame at 12:45. And we've got a local kid made good who made some history for Oakland as well on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Here comes the 2-2 now. On the way.
Line drive, base hit to center field. Coming in to score, Michael Busch. Patrick Wisdom delivers.
Yeah, I mean, the at-bat in the eighth inning was a great at-bat. A tough at-bat. The guy threw him the pitch that he wanted to throw, and Patrick, you know, high fastball, and Patrick shortened up and put the ball in play. So credit to him. Obviously, the homer's a great, great swing, but that was a...
That is big time from Patrick Wisdom. To have that at bat in the eighth inning, was lucky enough to be there on a glorious day yesterday at Wrigley Field, and that's a big moment. Michael Busch with the leadoff triple, and then a couple of folks with the opportunity. I think it was Dansby, who is slumping horrifically right now, seemingly in every phase. Dansby, I think, was at just a little ground ball to third base where Busch thankfully wasn't running on contact. And it just had to stay right there. And then Wisdom got behind 0-2, but stayed alive, fouled a pitch off straight back right before that base hit. And that was a good sign. It was like, oh, look at that. He is shortened up, and he is trying to just make contact. So all he needed was a fly ball or anything to the outfield, and that single to center was a big, big deal. Big insurance run in the Cubs. hung on. Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score. Back to the Cubs in a moment, but I wanted to commend Hersey High School graduate Brett Harris, who is the first graduate ever of Hersey High School to make the big leagues, who has now hit two home runs. He hit his first two home runs in the same game. He's the 11th member of the Oakland A's to do that, first since Ramon Laureano in 2018. And then how about these names, Matt Chapman, Matt Olson? They both did it in 2017. Their first two homers came in the same game. So that is a pretty tremendous thing for Brett Harris, local kid, Arlington Heights, got called up and had two big homers. So good for him, and congrats from Hit and Run right here on The Score. All right, the big stories of the Cubs weekend are certainly the bullpen issues. Adbert Alzolay, the struggles on Friday, and he's still there. A guy who's been good is Yency Almonte after a bit of a rough start. And Yency Almonte had a bit of a rough year last year as a member of the Dodgers, and he said that he shared those thoughts with Adbert after Friday's blown save.
Adbert, your boy down there is going through it right now. What's some encouraging things that you have to get to him? Because when you're struggling, you feel like you're on an island by yourself,
yes,
right? And you know, and ain't nobody going to tap you on the butt and tell you it's okay at the big league level because you're here. Yes. Ain't no higher level.
Yeah.
So what's some encouraging things that you have to get to him to get him back on track?
I mean, I told him a week ago or so ago where I was in the same shoes he's in right now last season. In the beginning of the year, I was struggling. I couldn't throw a breaking ball. And I feel like it messed me up mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I was out there by myself. And I'm one of those guys where I take stuff personally, you know, and I'm more to myself. And I don't want to talk to anybody about it. And I felt like I didn't want him to get to that situation, so I'm doing my part and just telling him, hey, you're making good pitches. I mean, yesterday it looked worse than what it was, but he only had one hard hit ball yesterday,
yeah,
and that was the ball by William Contreras. Other than that, it was a weak ground ball single, infield single, the bloop single. I'm like, you're making good pitches. It's just a matter of just attacking the zone. It's going to flip for you.
See, that's what I think, too. When you think about, okay, you're making good pitches, but the bigger picture is, like, the game.
Yes.
So, right, like, so you might give up a dink here, a dink here, but you got to hold guys on base. You, yes, got to do the little things that's, yes, going to give you a chance to get out of these innings without scoring any runs,
exactly,
right? Because if you hold a guy at first, that's just first and second.
Yep.
That's part of the game that you have to make sure you hone in on and make sure you get right.
I agree. And like you said, I think us as players, we get into that mindset of, like, we're so caught up that what's going wrong that we're just trying to lock in on one,
right,
thing. And I think that's,
yeah,
probably one thing that might happen yesterday. He's,
yeah,
just probably locking on trying to make a pitch and forgot about the runners.
That's Yency Almonte talking about Adbert Alzolay. Good stuff there with Cliff Floyd from Marquee. Very, very interesting stuff on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday. Enjoyed hearing Pete Crow Armstrong with our David Haw and our Bruce Levine. And PCA has had a good run offensively. He was talking for a while yesterday. I heard it about how he's got to focus, and he's learning to focus on the specific pitcher across from him, how they are trying to get him out with their stuff specifically. And, you know, it's so interesting. That makes sense to think about it specifically like that, but it also makes sense that PCA could be like, all right, I'm here in the big leagues, just got to stay myself and do all of that. So that was good stuff. What was also good was the discussion about his great route that he took in center field at Citi Field against the Mets to almost make a tremendous catch and how the ball came out of the glove. And he said that was an important moment for him.
Carter Hawkins was on the Mullen Hall show the other day, and he said he'd tell you that 9 out of 10 times he catches that ball. Oh, he'd tell you 10 out of 10 times he catches that ball. Take us through that play, and do you think that you should have caught that ball?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Carter. You know, that ball should have been caught for sure. I don't know. I think you can possibly tell that I'm still a little shook up about it. But, you know, those are the plays that I'm here to make, and not making that, you know, that was tough to swallow for sure. But very quickly after, I was picked up by my left fielder and my third baseman and my, yeah, catcher. So, you know, that's kind of the beauty of this stuff is, and sports in general is the way that the tides can kind of shift real quick. You know, I think that play, though, you know, specifically, that was a very important moment for me personally, I think, just having to move on to the next play. Mm-hmm. And become present again, you know. But again, I agree with Carter there. I think I would have to say I catch that 9, 10, 11 times out of 10. So, yeah, that's what I'm here to do. So I'll have to be putting the ball in my glove more than I have been. But, you know, the positioning was really good on that play. We were all on the same page in the outfield. And I've talked about getting set up for success by people around me. Like, that's kind of what happened there. And I didn't quite execute, but, you know, Naris ended up making a good pitch and gave Happer a chance and Nick a chance to make a play and save me there and save us there. And, you know, I've never gone through such a long replay process, but that was stressful for sure.
It's Pete Crow Armstrong and Inside the Clubhouse yesterday. Good stuff. So he said that drop was a big moment for him because he had to recover and get present again right away because he might get another one right away. And as it turned out, Hap to Madrigal to Amaya for that great play to end the Mets game with Alonso getting called out upon review was really good stuff. All right, couple things before we get out of here. Number one, I need to correct the trivia answer that I gave. Somehow I mixed it up in my mind. It's not Machado, it's Juan Soto. So the four active players who homered as teenagers are Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, and Jurickson Profar. And again, Profar is why I love the question, but you got to get the other parts right, Spiegel. Come on. Soto apparently also hit 22 homers as a teenager. 22 homers! It's a lot. So thank you to the many texters who helped correct that. I appreciate it. And another texter says, I thought Dave Kingman went to Hersey. No, he went to Prospect High School. Did Dave Kingman. Saw Dave Kingman jersey at Wrigley yesterday. Look good. Old dark blue pinstripe Dave Kingman jersey. Thank you so much to everyone who listened and texted and tweeted and hung out for Hit and Run. I love doing the show. Love being here with you. Thank you to our guests on the show. Tim Dillard from the Brewers pre- and post-game show. Thank you to James Fegan from Sox Machine and Ben Brown of the Chicago Cubs. That was really good. Rewind and check out Ben Brown. Very cool young man to get to talk to. And right now, coming up, the Cubs and the Brewers are going to conclude their series at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 12:45 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Thank you to Sean Sears for doing a fine job. Thank you to Mitch Rosen. Thank you to the associate producer of Hit and Run, young Ruben Ford Spiegel. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. I'll be back with you for Parkinson Spiegel tomorrow on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
All of a sudden, Busch Stadium with some energy again. Bases loaded. Cardinals down to their last strike.
Ring him up! Strike!
strikeout. And the White Sox, after a 3 hour and 3 minute rain delay, win it 6-5 in the 10th.
It'll go as a save for Tanner Banks, who comes on and gets the job done. And finally, and mercifully, this one has ended, and even more importantly, the Sox do have the win, which means tomorrow afternoon, get your rest, quick turnaround, it's going to be the third final and rubber game of the series.
Oh, man, there's so much in mercifully there from Steve Stone. So much. It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score. A little bonus time as we take you all the way towards Cubs pregame at 12:45. And what a delightful opportunity that provides as we welcome James Fegan of Sox Machine to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. James, good afternoon to you from St. Louis, from us here in Chicago. How are you?
I'm good. I probably passed out like 3 hours after that game ended last night. It was exhausting in every way, but it was nice to not walk into a silent clubhouse again.
What was number one among the exhausting ways? Psychologically?
Yeah, I would say so. There wasn't really any like food available anymore, so I can't say the decision I made when I opened up DoorDash when I got back to the hotel room was like the best one. Very much swinging on my shoes at something in the other batter's box type of move.
But. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes you hit those over the plate. Was it fried?
In some form. There's a place that will celebrate you basically anything in calzone form, not far from me, and that just seemed like, well, that's great. That sounds very carryable. Let's go for it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Calzone to be named later, I think, is an excellent choice by you. Boy, that was crazy. I got to say, though, John Brebbia is a delight. Like, his aggressiveness to try and get that stuff in the way that he talked about afterward, it reminded me of Vince Velasquez and Mike Trout from a couple years ago. He wanted to play. Did everybody else want to play, too, through that downpour?
I think, like, they wanted to seal up the win. I certainly don't think they wanted to go through this. But, like, that wasn't what I expected him to say at all. Like, the way he was reacting, how much he was struggling to, like, keep any ball dry, I assumed that he was just saying, like, this was impossible. Like, how do we do this? Like, I can't. Like, the last pitch he threw, he was sitting, like, 94, 95 the whole outing. And he threw like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball right over the plate, which I assume Gorman like couldn't even see. So the fact that like he thought this was great, let's keep going, was not what I expected his answer to be. I thought he was messing with me the first couple times he said it. I asked follow-ups. He's like, no, I was insisting. Like, we have to keep playing. This wasn't tenable.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, that actually dovetails with what the video is. Yeah, because he's like rubbing his hand like on the legs, right under the groin, the only safe, dry place he had apparently, and he's trying to get it in. But boy, CB Buckner is an odd one. Earlier in the game, like, was it Lopez who got called out with no punch out, no action
right.
at all? Yeah.
Lopez got called out with no action. Michael Kopech absolutely split the plate on 1-1, then got no call because it was a base stealing at the time. Then, like, Tanner probably threw strike three two pitches earlier, then gets strike three on something, you know, a baseball width outside. It's just one more wacky one for the road. I felt he thought he had to give us.
Yeah, just throw another calzone on the order at that point, I think.
That's what logic I go by. Yeah.
I recommend it. Look, the bullpen's been good, and a lot of the arms are looking impressive. Is it a, you know how volatile bullpens, though, are. Is the bullpen success a sign of anything in particular in your mind?
I mean, I thought it's been a little choppy at least in terms of like trying to hold leads against the Twins. But I think if anything, it should indicate like this is not where we should sink $50 million going forward. You know, they were able to kind of, you know, Kopech's obviously kind of was acquired at a high cost, and this was more of like a secondary option for him. But they're able to piece together decent arms. I mean, Brebbia wasn't somebody you had to break the bank for because, you know, you kind of targeted somebody with, you know, history being decent, who's coming off an injury. You know, Steven Wilson was kind of a throw into that trade, and he's been a decent, you know, medium leverage guy. But I think it goes to show that you can kind of get people with some of this upside as either throw-ins in some of these major deals and or find guys who have been affected before coming off injury and kind of cast a wide net. I mean, obviously we're not talking about Joe Barlow and Corey Knebel anymore, but, you know, you're going to get a hit rate on some of them where you should be able to fill out a decent crew if you're economical and you're opportunistic.
Yeah, maybe I'm overstating the bullpen success. The bullpen ERA is 21st in baseball, just ahead of the Cubs, who, and that's all we're talking about is how much their bullpen is struggling. I guess I'm dealing with some Sox fans looking for bright spots, and some of them have landed on Jordan Leisure and the like in the pen. So I guess that's how we get here conversationally. But you brought up the $50 million and the overall expenditure, and I had asked you, like, if there's an alternate White Sox history out there of if they had assigned some of the young arms to the bullpen and taken their chances with it a few years ago, as opposed to spending for Graveman and even Hendricks and Joe Kelly. And if they, you know, what would have happened if they used that money on other stuff? And I dream of an alternate history, but you don't think there's much of an alternate history possible, if memory serves.
I mean, a little bit of the way that they push for the bullpen is because it's like the only area with the dollars that they had available to them. It's like where they thought they could find like elite guys. Like they weren't going to, you know, for the rate you pay Liam Hendricks, you're going to get what an average-ish, like he basically made like, probably shade under Benintendi money, or mm-hmm. It wasn't something that was necessarily going to make some competitors for George Springer, which I think was something we all thought they should do to solve right field at the time. They didn't feel like they were economically in that area. Now, even within that, I don't think it absolves them the idea that they spent efficiently or, you know, even tactfully to, you know, given what they got from some of those investments. But I think it's a little bit of like it was an adaptation to what we don't have. The resources to compete at the top of the market in the outfield. But honestly, I think that would have been a better investment. I think they would have gotten more bang on their buck just pursuing, you know, Bryce Harper, or just, you know, consolidating everything for let's spend at the top for a positional talent that's going to lift us over the hump or compete for top starters.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real alternate history we think about a lot is Zach Wheeler or, you know, being more competitive. If they were willing to go for that outlay for Machado, what would be the real difference in pushing to the extra length or being more competitive on Bryce Harper? I think it's more the alternate history I think about than necessarily like let's use the same amount of bullpen funds for something else.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little bit like, well, let's get the best reliever available, and to some degree for until he got hurt and got sick, Liam Hendricks, you know, was delivering on what he was promised.
Yeah, no, that's well answered. I think the you know, that alternate history of if they'd gone to 300 instead of theoretically stopping at 250 for Machado and he comes, what follows with it? You know, what does it signify and what happens along with it in addition to his success? But that's not what happened. Here we are, James Fegan from Sox Machine. In this modern moment, I heard Garrett Crochet and bullpen used in the same sentence by Pedro Grifol the other day, and I need help. I need help understanding why that's a possibility long term here.
Yeah, that was strange. I assume it would come as a result of him hitting some sort of wall late in the season where you see like signs of fatigue or you know, other issues come across or waning effectiveness where that's what he gets ratcheted down to. Down at some point where when you ideally have Jonathan Cannon, Nick Mastrini, Drew Thorpe, even higher Ariarte maybe coming up and making some starts and you're kind of tapering Garrett down. It's a little bit of just they're living in a point where there's really no model for them to follow. The light comp that they gave was 2021 Carlos Rodon. But Carlos Rodon hit a wall late season where he lost velocity, he lost effectiveness, and he had to skip him in starts, but really there was nothing that was helping him recover as well. So they're trying to avoid that if they can, but I think they're also prepared for the idea that maybe July and August we're just going to hit a barrier where he's gone so far beyond anything he's ever done where you just have to taper him off somehow. And so that's what I assume he's kind of keeping the door open to, but it was a little jarring to hear, especially given his kind of role as kind of communicating the plan. I think you kind of want to be all in on Garrett the starter, we're committed to that project, and not kind of leaving over this weird door of like, well, maybe we'll abandon it at some point, which I think was jarring for all of us here.
Yeah, it's just really weird. And I understand that there's no model. Like, what do you do with a great arm like this who is showing that he can be a starter, but you're worried, you don't want it to blow up, and you don't know how long to push it? Like, I guess I'm more of the mind of just shutting him down entirely, if that's what you want to do, as opposed to having him go to the bullpen, because it's such a different discipline and a different ask in terms of get up, get down multiple times in a week, especially. But these are uncharted waters when you've got a legit arm for a year that doesn't matter with another year that probably doesn't matter ahead of you.
Yeah, I think there might be, it would have to be really measured outings out of the bullpen. It's not like some guy who's going to like pitch 3 days in a row type of situation. You'd think maybe he comes out in relief and works two innings or something like that. I think they probably want to avoid the full shutdown because they want to get used to the idea of like, you have a 6 month season, you're going to stay hot, you're going to stay loose, you know, this entire span, and you're going to kind of get used to the rhythm. I think in trying to build up their stamina, their idea is that they don't want to have him just, you know, basically pitch 4 months and, you know, he's still getting used to kind of still pitching and being strong in August, September next year when ideally it matters a little bit more, even if it's hard to look at the scheme of things. It'll matter next year.
I want to zoom out and go big picture in a couple minutes, but I want to ask you about a couple shorties first. Gavin Sheets leads the team in hits with a paltry 25, but I saw the opposite field yesterday getting utilized. Like, what do we make of the improvement here from Gavin Sheets at this point?
I think he's been the one saying that he can hang in against lefties and he can work all fields and he can be a more well-rounded hitter. And I think I wouldn't have necessarily thought it with the way his season ended last year, but he's done everything to earn this opportunity to give him this run. I know he's really geeked about being in there for a left-handed starter today. I think it's kind of in the same league with Garrett where, you know, maybe I have a bit more expectations for Garrett being able to mature in this role, but I think what better use could you make of the season than give a guy who's kind of beating on the door a chance to prove it? What I think is interesting is when Luis Robert comes back and you've got, you know, theoretically Tommy Pham and Benintendi in the corners, you've got Robbie Grossman out there as well. Do you start, is that where we start having the conversation of Sheets getting some of Andrew Vaughn's at bats because his performance has earned it and it becomes a lot harder to fit him into the lineup when you got Eloy Mendez and DH and the outfield a bit more filled up. So I think that's kind of the interesting barrier when they really put this to the test in a couple of weeks.
Wow. Yeah, that's because Vaughn, I believe Vaughn's OPS is sitting in the low 500s right now.
That'd be correct.
How has that happened? It looked like such a sensible hitter's swing. And now it looks chaotic up there. What has gone on?
It's hard to say. I certainly, like, at least even if like if it's disappointing from what his draft status was, I thought this was like somebody who's going to be slightly above league average kind of year in, year out with the tools he has. You know, when I've talked to him, he's really just trying to get back to the foundation of his pitch selection, which he felt like was out of whack, and that's why he's trying to basically, you know, I know we want to see him pull the ball in the air more, but he's trying to see it deeper just because he's trying to, like, not be out in front on sliders more often. So he's been trying to work right field a bit more just to kind of get him right as far as picking what he swings at. And, you know, the whole maybe next-level development we were hoping for of seeing more power that we thought would be 25, 30 home runs at this point in his career, that's still a step off.
Boy, it's a rough go. All right, a possible bright spot. Brian Ramos is here. Defensive replacement yesterday, gets his first start today. Will he be here long, and what are White Sox fans getting? Give us a thumbnail on Brian Ramos.
He's simultaneously got plus raw with this really compact swing that's kept him from being a 20% strikeout guy, even in the minors. He had a really slow start to this year, but he was heating up. He, you know, just hit a home run off he pulled a fastball at Ben Joyce the other day in Birmingham. It was like 99 miles an hour, so like the bat speed's there. I think he's a little raw. I think they know he's a little raw. I think they're also down to, like, their fifth, third baseman because Lenny Dos is injured and Yoan Moncada's injured and Danny Mendick's injured. So, yeah, I think when Mendick's off the IL, he's probably going to go back. That's the anticipation I've been told. But he's someone I think of as the third baseman in the future, you know, notwithstanding Colt Montgomery moving off shortstop at some point or Jacob Gonzalez. But I think he's got as good a chance as anybody to be that. He's got these – you know, great raw tools for it, and it's just, I know people get sick of hearing it, but this is like, you know, an elite makeup guy. This is someone who, this is a young man from Cuba who's speaking and doing full English interviews like last spring training. This is someone who's just beloved the organization, the way he handles things. They thought there was really no harm of giving him a taste that he would handle it well because he kind of handles everything well. And so it'll be a good little, like, hey, this is what you'll need to do up here before, you know, Itali makes it at some point this season.
All right, so as White Sox fans, James Fegan, are asked to zoom out and believe in a possible big picture reconstruction or rebuild for the second time in a decade. Brian Ramos is somebody they can look at and enjoy today on the big league level, watch Garrett Crochet pitch. As you have experienced some of the new hires under Chris Getz, and some of them like Brian Bannister and Josh Barfield can inspire some, if not confidence, then at least a little bit of optimism. How are you feeling about some of the big picture developmental principles, to the best of your knowledge, or some of the big picture ideas that have been shared with you to this point?
I like that I'm hearing a lot more about approach angle from the pitching development. I like that they're kind of searching for unique profiles. They're not kind of chasing, you know, what's been effective in another org so much. Maybe last time through, it's a bit more like let's find somebody who's unique in weird ways or has kind of different tool set. Like the Uriarte bet, I think, is really interesting and exciting because it's typically this guy that's tagged as a reliever and saying that we believe in his athleticism, mobility, that we can kind of coax command out of this frame that, you know, performance tracker, because it's not there, but looking at physicality, he has athleticism to repeat. So the fact that they're kind of zigzagging in some ways that I think are interesting, it's not the same critical mass where we were saying pray for the league the way the last prospect group was. It's not that strong, but the fact that they're kind of looking for unique profiles in a way a bit more and less for, like, seemingly following the recipe of other rebuilds, I think that's interesting. I don't know if it really makes you more than a divisional contender with the talent lining up right now, but there's a bit more creativity than just, like, we tanked harder than anybody and maybe we'll produce more results.
All right, well, that's interesting. That's got some legs. At least there's, you know, some different ideas. What do you make of the success at Birmingham? I have to give credit to it because I, for years, have pointed out the relentless minor league success at every level of the Tampa Rays, and then you see what they deliver on the regular. And the White Sox have had horrific minor league win-loss results, including Charlotte now, and Charlotte for the last several years. So seeing Birmingham be good feels like it should be encouraging, is it?
Yeah, I think so, and it's certainly something they're cognitive of. Let's not immediately rip this apart, or everybody who's good here needs to be promoted right away. There's definitely an attitude of, like, this team plays really cohesively together as a unit, that their defense and pitching is really symbiotic, and they're able to win even though, like, they're not as good offensively as maybe they are anticipated because Ramos got up to a slow start. So they're very cognizant of trying to keep that together and try to bottle that group and see what's going on there and not, like, throw it out of hand and just saying, like, Drew Thorpe looks like he doesn't belong here, let's promote him. I don't know if it's quite necessarily transferable to every single level or if it's a little bit fluky with just, like, how much pitching they have stocked up there, but it's definitely something that I think they're looking at as, like, well, this is meaningful. How do we translate it, and how do we also keep it together and make sure everyone gets as much out of it as it should?
All right, last thing, James. The White Sox reported deal to go with Stadium as a new regional sports network from a few weeks ago by the Chicago Sun-Times has now been trumped by reporting at The Athletic that the White Sox, Blackhawks, and Bulls will be instead partnering with something called Standard Media Group to create a new television broadcast home, and that will happen, according to the article, very, very, very soon. But then I thought the follow-up work by the dark overlord of Sox Machine, Jim Margulis, was really interesting, that Standard Media Group doesn't have a real tangible presence online or on the ground in Nashville, does it? How are you feeling about this this plan for a new RSN at this point?
Mostly just like, oh, that's weird. I wonder what they'll really say when we actually hear about it. But right now, this is confusing.
Yeah, it's weird, man. It's weird. It really is. It feels very weird. I don't know what the hell's going on, but, you know, I guess that goes for a lot of things.
And I guess, like, Jim texted me, like, I'm going to go take a picture of their headquarters. And I was like, ha ha, funny. And then he's like, no, really. And I was like, oh, all right.
He did. He's got a picture of the headquarters and a picture of, like, the promotional board of, like, what businesses actually are there. And I think he was standing near a line for the Maggiano's that was next door.
He circled the parking lot three times.
This is important work. I'm glad I'm a patron. That's, you know, I'm glad I'm on Patreon for Sox Machine. That's all I'm saying. I can read every little bit of that, damn it. Oh,
well, I thank you, and my landlord thanks you, because I'm now making rent, which is, always something that lifts spirits of the entire group.
You know what? Consider that next calzone on me, indirectly. Okay?
I will.
Thank you. Think of me on your next calzone, which is the way I sign off with every interview now on Hit and Run. Think of me during your next calzone. Thank you. Thank you, James. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. James is ridiculous and delightful. And I hope he does think of me during his next calzone. I'm telling you, man, there's no White Sox story that's normal. There's not a single one. And I mean, it's unbelievable. So stadium was supposedly the deal. Now it's this thing with the Standard Media Group. And I'm telling you, Margulis's follow-up is just amazing. There's no signage indicating Standard Media's presence in Nashville. And the Standard Media Group does not seem to exist too much online. And we'll see what the hell happens. But I think James's reaction of, huh, that's weird, is very appropriate as of right now. Still to come on Hit and Run with one more segment to go. We will set the table in full for the Cubs and the Brewers. Zach Zaman coming up with pregame at 12:45. And we've got a local kid made good who made some history for Oakland as well on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Here comes the 2-2 now on the way.
Line drive, base hit to center field. Coming in to score, Michael Busch. Patrick Wisdom delivers.
Yeah, I mean, the at bat in the eighth inning was a great at bat. A tough at bat. The guy threw him the pitch that he wanted to throw, and Patrick, you know, high fastball, and Patrick shortened up and put the ball in play. So credit to him. Obviously, the homer's a great swing, but that was a...
That is big time from Patrick Wisdom. To have that at bat in the eighth inning, was lucky enough to be there on a glorious day yesterday at Wrigley Field, and that's a big moment. Michael Busch with the leadoff triple, and then a couple of folks with the opportunity. I think it was Dansby, who is slumping horrifically right now, seemingly in every phase. Dansby, I think, was at a little ground ball to third base where Busch thankfully wasn't running on contact. And it just had to stay right there. And then Wisdom got behind 0-2, but stayed alive, fouled a pitch off straight back right before that base hit. And that was a good sign. It was like, oh, look at that. He is shorting up, and he is trying to just make contact. So all he needed was a fly ball or anything to the outfield, and that single to center was a big, big deal. Big insurance run in the Cubs. Hung on. Matt Spiegler with you on 670 The Score. Back to the Cubs in a moment. But I wanted to commend Hersey High School graduate Brett Harris, who is the first graduate ever of Hersey High School to make the big leagues, who has now hit two home runs. He hit his first two home runs in the same game. He's the 11th member of the Oakland A's to do that, first since Ramon Laureano in 2018. And then how about these names, Matt Chapman, Matt Olson? They both did it in 2017. Their first two homers came in the same game. So that is a pretty tremendous thing for Brett Harris, local kid, Arlington Heights, got called up and had two big homers. So good for him, and congrats from Hit and Run right here on The Score. All right, the big stories of the Cubs weekend are certainly the bullpen issues. Adbert Alzolay, the struggles on Friday, and he's still there. A guy who's been good is Yency Almonte after a bit of a rough start. And Yency Almonte had a bit of a rough year last year as a member of the Dodgers, and he said that he shared those thoughts with Adbert after Friday's blown save.
Adbert,
your boy down there is going through it right now. What's some encouraging things that you have to get to him? Because when you're struggling, you feel like you're on an island by yourself,
yes.
Right? And you know, and ain't nobody going to tap you on the butt and tell you it's okay at the big league level because you're here. Yes. Ain't no higher level.
Yeah.
So what's some encouraging things that you have to get to him to get him back on track?
I mean, I told him a week ago or so ago where I was in the same shoes he's in right now last season. In the beginning of the year, I was struggling. I couldn't throw a breaking ball. And I feel like it messed me up mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I was out there by myself. And I'm one of those guys where I take stuff personally, you know, and I'm more to myself. And I don't want to talk to anybody about it. And I felt like I didn't want him to get to that situation. So I'm doing my part and just telling him, hey, you're making good pitches. I mean, yesterday it looked worse than what it was. But he only had one hard hit ball yesterday.
Yeah.
And that was the ball by William Contreras. Other than that, it was a weak ground ball single, infield single, the bloop single. I'm like, you're making good pitches. It's just a matter of just attacking the zone. It's going to flip for you.
See, that's what I think, too. When you think about, okay, you're making good pitches, but the bigger picture is like the game.
Yes.
So, right, like so you might give up a dink here, but you got to hold guys on base. You got to do the little things that's going to give you a chance to get out of these innings without scoring any runs,
exactly.
Right? Because if you hold a guy at first, that's just first and second.
Yep.
That's part of the game that you have to make sure you hone in on and make sure you get right.
I agree. And like you said, I think us as players, we get into that mindset of like we're so caught up that what's going wrong that we're just trying to lock in on one
right.
thing. And I think that's probably one thing that might happen yesterday. He's just probably locking on trying to make a pitch and forgot about the runners.
That's Yency Almonte talking about Adbert Alzolay. Good stuff there with Cliff Floyd from Marquee. Very, very interesting stuff on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday. Enjoyed hearing Pete Crow Armstrong with our David Haw and our Bruce Levine. And PCA has had a good run offensively. He was talking for a while yesterday. I heard it about how he's got to focus and he's learning to focus on the specific pitcher across from him, how they are trying to get him out with their stuff specifically. And, you know, it's so interesting that makes sense to think about it specifically like that. But it also makes sense that PCA could be like, all right, I'm here in the big leagues, just got to stay myself and do all of that. So that was good stuff. What was also good was the discussion about his great route that he took in center field at Citi Field against the Mets to almost make a tremendous catch and how the ball came out of the glove. And he said that was an important moment for him.
Carter Hawkins was on the Mullen Haw show the other day, and he said he'd tell you that 9 out of 10 times he catches that ball. Oh, he'd tell you 10 out of 10 times he catches that ball. Take us through that play, and do you think that you should have caught that ball?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Carter. You know, that ball should have been caught for sure. I don't know. I think you can possibly tell that I'm still a little shook up about it. But, you know, those are the plays that I'm here to make, and not making that, you know, that was tough to swallow for sure. But very quickly after, I was picked up by my left fielder and my third baseman and my catcher. So, you know, that's kind of the beauty of this stuff is in sports in general is the way that the tides can kind of shift real quick. You know, I think that play though, you know, specifically, that was a very important moment for me personally. I think just having to move on to the next play,
mm-hmm.
And become present again. You know, but again, I agree with Carter there. I think I would have to say I catch that 9, 10, 11 times out of 10. So, yeah, that's what I'm here to do. So I'll have to be putting the ball in my glove more than I have been. But, you know, the positioning was really good on that play. We were all on the same page in the outfield. And I've talked about getting set up for success by people around me. Like, that's kind of what happened there. And I didn't quite execute, but, you know, Naris ended up making a good pitch and gave Happer a chance and Nick a chance to make a play and save me there and save us there. And, you know, I've never gone through such a long replay process, but that was stressful for sure.
It's Pete Crow Armstrong and Inside the Clubhouse yesterday. Good stuff. So he said that drop was a big moment for him because he had to recover and get present again right away because he might get another one right away. And as it turned out, Hap to Madrigal to Amaya for that great play to end the Mets game with Alonso getting called out upon review. Was really good stuff. All right, couple things before we get out of here. Number one, I need to correct the trivia answer that I gave. Somehow I mixed it up in my mind. It's not Machado, it's Juan Soto. So the four active players who homered as teenagers are Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, and Jurickson Profar. And again, Profar is why I love the question, but you got to get the other parts right, Spiegel. Come on. Soto apparently also hit 22 homers as a teenager. 22 homers! It's a lot. So thank you to the many texters who helped correct that. I appreciate it. And another texter says, I thought Dave Kingman went to Hersey. No, he went to Prospect High School. Did Dave Kingman. Saw Dave Kingman jersey at Wrigley yesterday.
Oh.
Look good. Old dark blue pinstripe Dave Kingman jersey. Thank you so much to everyone who listened and texted and tweeted and hung out for Hit and Run. I love doing the show. Love being here with you. Thank you to our guests on the show. Tim Dillard from the Brewers pre- and post-game show. Thank you to James Fegan from Sox Machine and Ben Brown of the Chicago Cubs. That was really good. Rewind and check out Ben Brown. Very cool young man to get to talk to. And right now, coming up, the Cubs and the Brewers are going to conclude their series at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 12:45 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Thank you to Sean Sears for doing a fine job. Thank you to Mitch Rosen. Thank you to the associate producer of Hit and Run, young Ruben Ford Spiegel. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. I'll be back with you for Parkinson Spiegel tomorrow on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Quartet pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.